are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Oof. Jose Abreu has 13 home runs this year. Care to guess how many of them are at home? Zero.
Yeah, none.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
During the day games, he has an ERA of 2.2. But at night games, that balloons up to nearly 7.
Well, his name is Sonny, so.
Yeah, clearly, you know? So I was going to allude to that pun there.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So clearly, Sonny enjoys being Sonny.
Oh, did you start already? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I told you I was getting a water.
I thought you were joking.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 292 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Well, I'm well hydrated, so that's a good thing. No, I'm doing good. Just watching a little bit of the College World Series. I might be the only person that enjoys the college game. It's back to kind of true baseball this year, a little bit of power introduced in Omaha with the new bats and new rules and stuff like that. But yeah, just enjoying it. Excited to talk to you and our guest today.
Well, your water joke will be a little surprise for the end of the episode, so definitely listen through the outro music to hear the mistake at the beginning of the episode that has been cut and moved around. So, I definitely don't watch the College World Series. I mean, we're getting close to football season, speaking of football season, we're going to have a football podcast coming up soon. And we have a friend of the podcast who hasn't been on in almost exactly 2 years, since I believe episode 23. Yeah. So it's been a long time.
Evan, too long.
I'm gonna butcher his last name as I always do. Evan Turisiano of Fantasy Football Diehards is on with us. Evan, welcome to the show.
What's going on? Yeah, time flies when you're having fun, and when you get to do what we do here for work, it's if you even want to call it work. I can't believe it's been 2 years. That's crazy. You had mentioned it when we had started chatting. I thought it back to it. I'm like, mother, wow, it really has been that long. So, but good to be back. Thanks for having me, and happy to chat with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, thank God for Facebook in there on this day, because I mean, I hadn't even thought about how long it had been. And then this last weekend up pops, on this day 2 years ago, you had Evan on the podcast. I was like, holy shit, this worked out. So, Evan, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, a little bit about Fantasy Football Diehards and what you do over there. I know you're still a baseball guy at heart and stuff, and so mm-hmm. we wanted to have you on, and we'll definitely have you on for football season. But promote some of the work you do and where people can reach you on social media.
Yeah, sure. So right now, in the past, I have written baseball content for a number of different sites, most recently Fantasy Alarm. This is my first season off of that, so it's a welcome break. It's a nice little hiatus for me to just cover one sport, primarily football, and like you mentioned, it's with Football Diehards, and for those folks, I pretty much run the gambit in terms of what I do. I'm on air for them all the time on SiriusXM. Usually have a spot and kind of chit-chat about all the articles that I write. In-season content, it focuses on everything from waiver wire pickups to trades to answering questions on Twitter for the Sunday stuff and all that. And right now we are in the heart of magazine writing. So I'm writing all the bios and editing everybody else's content. We have a whole lot of stuff that's going to be hitting the newsstands within the next month or so, just like everybody else. And so you can find my work certainly on the website, footballdiehards.com. You can hit me up on my Twitter handle. I'm @roto_wizard. And if you have any questions about either sport, it's not like I've completely abandoned baseball. I have to watch my Yankees go through the midst of their doldrums here as we crawl into the All-Star break. But just give me a holler if you need a hand.
Definitely do that, and we'll definitely have you back on for football. We should be rolling those episodes out. I think I'm going to record an episode with Eli this week, so that should start rolling out, and we'll get regular content.
Seems so early, but I mean, I guess it's really not. So.
We're actually late.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, that's what I mean. No, yeah, it seems like it's. I guess the year's just flown by.
Evan's been working since like virtually the beginning of January.
Yeah, I've noticed that. You don't sleep, huh? Go right from the Super Bowl to preseason prep.
Pretty much. That's why we're called the diehards, right? We got somebody's got to be like that. So. Right.
Yep. All right, but we got some baseball content. Let's talk about baseball for right now. And I want to talk about Ben Gamble. Ben Gamble was a guy that Matt and I kind of touted early on in the preseason this year as a kind of sleeper guy. And then we had the Mitch Haniger traded, which seemed to kind of dull down a little bit of the shine that Matt and I had for him. But in spite of that that trade, he's been fantastic this year with and without Haniger in the lineup. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Ben Gamble so far?
2016 International League MVP Ben Gamble. So that, I think that gives you an idea of the type of player he can be. Obviously he's not a 346 hitter. I feel pretty safe projecting nobody to be that way. But looking at Ben Gamble's profile, at first glance, he looks like the kind of guy, in my opinion, with the rise of power in the game. I mean, Gamble only has 4 home runs in 54 games. The rise in power in the game and kind of the sacrifice of batting average, obviously he's not going to hit 346. We get that. But I do think he's a profile that can hover around the upper 280s and low 290 marks. You know what I mean? I think that's ultimately a true talent level. Yeah, he's probably not going to pop a lot of home runs. And surprisingly, I did think he'd contribute a little more on the bases. 2 stolen bases in 54 games is a little disappointing. But, I mean, he is a guy that doesn't really have plus speed, so he probably takes advantage of, he's probably took advantage of catching situations in the upper levels of the minor leagues that probably weren't the best. But I do think he's not really your type of guy, Justin, which is crazy to me because maybe you're switching philosophy a little bit with kind of the batting average guys kind of having a little bit more value. The guys on the Sleeper in the Bus podcast talked about how Jose Abreu is probably slightly more valuable than some of the empty 40 home run guys because he hits for average. And I kind of think while he's not this type of player, I think Ben Gamble kind of fits that mold a little bit if he gets regular playing time. And he's doing nothing to not get regular playing time. I mean, he's a pretty good defensive outfielder, just like I said, despite not having the plus speed. You got to like the 86% contact rate. Obviously, .456 BABIP isn't going to stick. But again, I think he's a guy that's shown that he can put the bat in the ball consistently, and he hits the ball surprisingly hard for a guy with limited power as him. Maybe it's just a launch angle kind of thing, but hopefully he doesn't change what he's doing because Ben Gamble's been a pretty nice scoop on a lot of my teams on the end of the waiver wire.
Yeah, I mean, I typically am a guy who kind of punts batting average coming in the season, but in order
I was wondering if your strategy changed because, I mean, the landscape in baseball has changed drastically.
I don't think it's necessarily changed, but I think you still need to supplement with guys like this that can provide some sort of level of average at no cost to you. And that's what Ben Gamble was coming into the season. But before I dive in too deep, I want to get Evan's thought on Ben Gamble. Evan, what are your thoughts on this guy?
He kind of reminds me of the reverse Keon Broxton. You know, he doesn't really provide the sexy statistics. It's not the home runs and the steals per se, but it's good defense in the outfield, certainly a strong batting average. If you're in an OBP league, he's done exceptionally well so far, over 400. He's a good hitter. I think that heading into the season, I don't want to say this is what I expected, but I had him kind of penciled in as that, third, fourth outfielder, a fine option. He's going to benefit certainly from the Mariners, the base runners that they're going to have on. So if he continues to hit around, like you said before, 280, 285, 290, certainly the RBI chances will be there, and he'll score plenty of runs in this lineup. So again, he might not be the sexiest player, especially when owners are scrambling for speed, or we're in the midst of this big power surge, and you don't happen to project him for anything more than I would say 8 to 10 homers tops for the rest of the year. But like you alluded to before, I kind of expected a little bit more in the steals than what I've seen so far. If you take a look at his minor league track record in terms of steals, it was smattering here and there. But the speed is, I think, better than what he's shown. Maybe just hasn't had the chances on the base pass so far. But I don't think he's going to keep this up. But like you said, as someone that can boost the statistics, especially from a batting average and OBP standpoint, he's a worthy add.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, like I mentioned, Matt and I were kind of big on him coming into the season, and I did expect a little bit more in the stolen base department, and I think that still could come, but I think Matt's right. I don't think he's a guy with necessarily elite speed, but probably just above average and kind of gains bags based on instincts. You know, I would probably take the over on Steamer and Zips projections, and they have Zips has him for 5 home runs, 5 stolen bases, rest of the way with a .265 average. I think he can comfortably live in the .280 to .290 average department. He's been walking about 9% of the time, which is pretty decent. And, I mean, I think he is one of those guys that is very, very unsexy. But especially if you rolled out a strategy like I do in a lot of my leagues that Matt mentioned, where I tend to punt batting average coming into the year, he's a nice little supplement guy that, you know, in 15-team leagues, you know, may still be around or easily obtainable via trade that can really help kind of supplement, you know, an average that you need to bring up. All right, let's talk about Zach Godley, because he has been pitching fantastically as of late, and I think he's not really getting enough love. So, Evan, what are your thoughts on Zach Godley?
You know, it's funny that we have a handful of these pitchers every single year where they come in and you expect them to be pretty much the baseline, the average, and nothing really more than that. I can't say that I would have projected Godley to take some massive increases forward like he's done, because, again, there's really no... It's not an overpowering fastball that gets him by. It's not an elite level. I mean, certainly he's had a handful of good strikeout games, but you know, to see this kind of a jump was a bit concerning. It was kind of like, where the heck did this come from? Especially, you know, given the fact that you know, he's playing in Arizona, you expected that to certainly kind of weigh in on his ERA and his WHIP. Again, he's fine. I don't think he's going to keep anything up like this, because his stuff isn't exactly overpowering, and if he loses that command at all, he's going to get shelled, especially in that home ballpark. So, you know, he's one of those pitchers that might have dramatic first to second half splits. The 2.5 ERA and the WHIP that's sitting currently at 1, I think, is a bit misleading. So, you know, to see that spike up and finish the year around, you know, 3.3, 3.4, and, you know, slightly higher WHIP is fine, but I just can't see this kind of dominance continuing for long.
Matt, what are your thoughts on this? Are you buying Zach Godley?
I am, just because the pitching landscape out there right now in a lot of my leagues is just rough. I'll just say it like that. And there's no way you could cut Godley if you have him. The underlying stats are, obviously, he's been a bit lucky, which you have to be to have a 2.5 ERA in this day and age. His BABIP is .247. But I do think a lot of that is real. I mean, even he showed strides in 2015 in a limited sample. You know, he came up, was a guy that was getting ground balls, doesn't strike anybody out, and he's still kind of that guy. 2016, he was miserable in his 75-inning sample for the Diamondbacks, had an ERA over 6. But he's still getting ground balls at a 54% clip. This year, he's getting ground balls at a 60% clip, which is amazing. And he's not walking anyone. He's still striking out less than a batter per 9, but it's not anywhere near Ivan Nova level, so it's you don't have to sweat it. I do think he's getting lucky with the BABIP, but I do think a lot of that is also Torey Lovallo and the Diamondbacks are now, the Diamondbacks themselves are very front office. Their front office and everything's changed. They're very more. They're more analytical now with Mike Hazen and all the Red Sox guys that came over there. Brought Torey Lovallo over. You see, they run a lot more now too. They're more fantasy friendly, I guess, because they do pay attention to the analytics and in that ballpark. And he keeps the ball on the ground. He's getting a little bit lucky with the left on base percentage and the BABIP, but he's got a really safe floor. And his skill set to me is very similar to Kyle Hendricks, except substitute the curveball for the changeup. Because if you watch Godley pitch, he kind of cuts the fastball. He's two seamer. He'll sink it. He'll run a four seamer up on the hands. He's a really crafty guy. He's getting by with really good command right now. I don't know if it's as good as it is now, but I mean, it is possible that he's showing some growth. He is 27. That's kind of a magical year for pitchers. He's never really been hurt. He was traded from the Cubs in 2014 as an early kind of piece, as somebody they Diamondback kind of through the end of the rotation. And I think now with the new analytical raise, I don't see any reason why he's not Kyle Hendricks right now. And that's kind of what he's doing. And I would not be shocked at all if he kind of, you know, fell backwards toward his 2015 levels next year. But you got to ride it out for now. And I think even in keeper leagues, I think he's even approaching the level where you might consider, you know, if you keep 10 to 15 guys, he's probably on your list. He's been really good.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy I'm buying. I love the elite ground ball percentage. You know, he's done a lot. I mean, his fastball sucks. Let's just be honest.
Sure. I mean, yep. He's crafty, though.
It's a bad fastball. But what he's done really well this year, one, is the velocity is up on the fastball, which, you know, in spite of it not being, you know, not having very good movement and being very hittable, he's played off it really well with the curveball and the sinker. And that's really helped him kind of increase the whiffs as well as, you know, keep that ground ball or the ball on the ground, which is helpful, especially in a place like Arizona, when he goes and pitches in other bad areas like Colorado. So I like Zach Godley, and I like the fact that they gave him the rotation spot let him stay in the rotation when Taijuan Walker came back and didn't throw him into the bullpen or back down to AAA. They just moved Randall Delgado down or back into the bullpen. So I think he's got a spot to stay for right now. And, yeah, there's going to be some kind of worse days. But even both his FIP and XFIP aren't like, outrageous. You know, it's 317 FIP, 324 XFIP. So, I mean, even if he regresses to, like, a 330 pitcher rest of the way, that's still pretty damn good in this day and age. Let's talk about Andrelton Simmons, because Simmons is a guy who's always been an elite defender, and, you know, he showed moments early on in his career that maybe he could be a guy that could have some, you know, power and speed from the shortstop position, but for the most part, he's just been kind of a defender guy, or a great, fantastic defender, a Gold Glover for the Angels and the Braves previously, but this year's having kind of a breakout season offensively. 7 home runs, 13 stolen bases with a .280 average so far. Evan, what are your thoughts on Andrelton Simmons?
You know, certainly the breakout that many expected him to carry over from that really good 2013 year with the Braves just never happened. He never hit again more than 7 home runs. He's never had more than 50 RBIs even since then. So to expect any kind of a power resurgence, it's hard to fully let me trust this per se. You know, he'll probably finish with double digits for the first time since that 2013 campaign with them. And yeah, the stolen bases for me, it's not the fact that he was slow in prior years. I mean, if you take a look in terms of the, you know, caught stealing versus the attempts and whatnot, he just wasn't running at a very good clip. I mean, he past years would get basically thrown out as many times as he would be able to steal a bag. You know, this year it's been a lot more successful. The opportunities have been there. He's only been caught stealing twice. So, you know, in the midst of a good hitting team, even despite the fact that the Trout's not there, you know, you like Simmons right now. I don't think that the power is really sustainable, but in terms of the pace that he's on right now for the, you know, the runs, RBIs, you know, having them finishing in the 70s or so, you know, certainly going to be around 20 stolen bases, if not more than that, by the end of the year. So like him as certainly probably what you paid for. It was probably no more than a flyer, no more than a waiver wire pickup in many formats. And to have him produce at this level, owners certainly have to be quite happy with the return on the investment so far.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Simmons?
Yeah, man. I tweeted this out about probably 2 weeks ago. I said, you know, all the weird things you think about in the fantasy baseball landscape in 2017. I said Andrelton Simmons being 12-team relevant in fantasy baseball leagues is by far the weirdest for me, just because watching him play on offense, he's just been a zero. He's been the guy, you know, he's been, for lack of a better word, he's been garbage offensively for for the last few years, and he's showing power. I don't know whether it's a new launch angle kind of thing or just being more aggressive, but he's showing power that's kind of flashing back to his 2012, 2013 with the Braves. 2012 in a cup of coffee, he slugged .416, which isn't great, but, I mean, that's kind of what he's doing now. He did hit career-high 17 homers in 2013, but, I mean, everything else kind of went down the tubes, and he's, like Evan touched on the stolen bases, he's been a lot more efficient. I mean, last year he was 10 for 11. This year he's 13 for 15 so far, then that's great. You'll deal with that all day. It's still weird to me because, you know, he's obviously a premium athlete. Watching him on defense is one of the greatest things you can watch in baseball. And for him to be showing offensive value and being relevant in mixed leagues is still weird to me, like I said. But, I mean, I still question what the end game for the power is. I mean, I still think he probably ends up with about, what, 12 home runs?
Yeah.
12 home runs and probably 17, 18 stolen bases, and that's way more than I would have thought. So I still wouldn't bank on drafting him high again next year because I do think there's a lot of things I don't like in the skill set. I mean, he doesn't walk enough for me for a guy with his limited offensive profile, and obviously the Angels suck. So there's also that, but it's been a surprise, and it's always nice to see younger players like this. He's 27, so maybe he's kind of stepping into his prime. I guess the new peak is kind of earlier than 27, though, with you know, young just baseball players, baseball teams steering toward the younger players anyways. And I do think it's a contract year for Simmons, I believe. I could be wrong on that.
No,
so
he's got a long-term deal.
Does he? Yeah, he does. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, my bad. Oh, 2020. Oops. Yep, ignore what I said there. But, yeah, it's been a surprise. It's been nice. He needs to walk a little more for me to be 100% comfortable, but you can't complain with a 9% strikeout rate either. So, ride it out.
Yeah, what he's doing is pretty simple. He's pulling things. I mean, he's in the ball a little bit harder, but for the most part, he's just pulling things and getting a few more home runs out of it. I think that will get exploited at some point as pitchers kind of figure out, maybe we can't kind of pitch him in inside the way we've been doing in the past, and we need to kind of force him to go the opposite way a little bit more. But, I mean, I think considering you probably paid absolutely nothing outside of maybe AL only, you got to be pretty happy with return on investment. I think he'll probably end up kind of reverting a little bit more back to what he's been the last couple of years, especially in the power department. You know, I would be surprised if he got to 15 home runs this year. I mean, I'm guessing, yeah, he probably hits 4 to 5 more home runs. But it's the stolen bases that have been nice. 13 stolen bases so far. And so if he can steal at least 7 more, that's 20. And I got a feeling he's going to probably, the Angels are a team that are going to have to manufacture runs. And they're going to get Mike Trout back here in a little while, but they're still going to be a team that needs to manufacture offense because they can't solely rely on Trout to carry that entire team. And so I think they will push it at times on the base pass and give Simmons a chance to kind of run a little bit more than I think he might have been used to in previous seasons. So I think he's a guy that will probably end up with, 12, 13 home runs and 25 stolen bases, and you can't really sneeze at that from the shortstop position.
No, not at all.
All right, let's move on to the next guy and talk about Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray has been a frustrating fantasy option to own the last couple years.
And that's the word for it. That's true.
I think a lot of people have been burnt by him, this year has been no different. He's had moments in which he's looked like the elite pitcher that he was in 2015 and moments where he looked like the guy he was last year. When he put up a 5.69 ERA. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Sonny Gray?
Do you know who Sonny Gray is to me? Do you remember?
I know who Sonny Gray is to me, but
Do you remember Jeremy Hellickson with the Rays?
Yes.
he put up all these numbers. You know, go back to the Rays days, 2012, 2013. Well, not 2013, 2011 and 2012 for Hellickson. 2.95 and a 3.10 ERA, and his strikeout rate was 5.5, 6.3, with a walk rate of 3.4 and 3. BABIP 223, 261. BABIP normalized in 2013, and his ERA was up over 5. And I think that's – Sonny Gray was massively overrated from the start, which doesn't mean he's bad. There's a difference between overrated and bad. And he was billed as his front-of-the-line starter, which he never was. The peripherals never said that. 7.5 strikeout rate, it was a little better than Hellickson's. The walk rate was about the same, but he always got away with good BABIP. BABIP stabilized last year, plus the injury bug bit him, and look at where his ERA was, 5.6. I still think that's an avid comp, or a really good comp, and you look at Sonny Gray this year, he's battled the injury bug. He's come back. He's been very mediocre. He's rosterable because of the way pitching is. The ERA, believe it or not, at 4.4 is roughly league average, especially for American League.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's probably a little slightly better than average in an AL-only league, to be honest. Strikeouts are at a career high for him for a sustainable stretch, besides his 2013 cup of coffee at over 9. The walk rate's about the same. He's given up a little more home runs than normal. His BABIP's up for 320, which for a guy like him, that might be normal because he doesn't throw hard, doesn't have the downward plane. He's a guy that gets a lot of the zone, so he's probably going to have a little bit higher BABIP. He works around the corners and the edges. The command coming back probably hasn't been where it needs to be. He's been very, very frustrating, but I think this is who he is. And He's a guy that I'm not going to own on purpose in the future going forward. But if I do, it'll be a really late bargain. And I think somebody will probably pull the trigger before me just because he has some, he still has name value being Sonny Gray. But if I had him, which I don't, I'd be looking to sell because I think Oakland is going to sell him too. And he's going to go to a worse park than where he's at now. And that can't be good for a guy with his peripherals. So I guess I'm out, but I kind of was already out before that.
Evan, what are your thoughts on Sonny Gray?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much summed it up nicely when you talked about that he was taken a little bit higher than a lot were, you know, especially myself, were comfortable with just based upon name recognition. I mean, he had certainly several nice seasons, you know, 2014 and 15, and then just crashed back down earth last year. And you had that whole, you know, well, which one should we trust? Is it the three-year average? Is it just last year? Is it what? You know, we all knew that injuries certainly played a part with the struggles last year. You're taking a look at the splits on Sonny Gray. It's kind of awkward, some of these splits. Like, here's a fun example. Like, his day games, during the day games, he has an ERA of 2.2. But at night games, that balloons up to nearly 7.
Well, his name is Sonny, so.
Yeah, clearly, you know. So I was going to allude to that pun there. So clearly Sonny enjoys being Sonny. So, I mean, look, Gray is inconsistent. I think he's pretty much one of the poster childs for that. His stuff is fine, you know, good, I guess you could say. You know, speed of the fastball and certainly the remaining pitches he has are good to league average. But that's kind of what he is at this point. So we've seen him regress to be that, you know, SP two back end, mid SP2 right now to just kind of a you have to play on the matchups type thing. So, you know, the regression I assumed would happen is here. And thankfully, I don't own very many shares of Sonny Gray. So,
yeah, I own zero shares of Sonny Gray, and I've been an ardent detractor of him for the last couple years. For me, you know, Matt gave his comp in Hellickson, or, you know, early career Hellickson. I see a lot of kind of late career Lincecum. And part of it is the physical size. They're, you know, both kind of shorter, lighter guys, and with that have had, you know, pretty big workloads in the past. And when the hip injury started kind of flaring up last year for Gray, I was completely off board, and I didn't want to have anything to do with him. I still don't. I don't know how well he's going to hold up. He's going to get sold because the A's missed their window of opportunity to get a huge kind of ransom for him at the end of 2015. Mm-hmm. He's going to get sold, and wherever he goes, I mean, you know, for the most part, he's going to have worse park effects. And a guy who, with his kind of stuff, is not going to hold up well in those locations. So if you have Sonny Gray, I'm looking to sell him as well. I don't believe that he will. I'm not going to. You know, I've got hip issues as well, and so like I know what I know what it's like to have a bad hip and try to play sports and things like that. And I can't imagine him, one, holding up, and two, moving to a different location, being good for his fantasy value. So yeah, I'm out on Sonny Gray.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. I mean, you look at Houston, like, remember the trade rumors? He was rumored to go to Houston because he got scratched from the start and ended up being like a fake tweet or something. And, mm-hmm. and you know, you're trying to guess at what the return is. And I was running through my head because, you know, I follow the minor league systems pretty deep. And I was thinking about it, like, you see all the rumors. It's like, oh, Derek Fisher going to the A's. It's like, even that's even too much, in my opinion.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, there aren't going to be a ton of top tier starting pitchers out on the market.
No, but I guess if you're Houston, I mean, do you go Brad Peacock or Sonny Gray rest of the season? Because I'm going Brad Peacock, and I don't think it's close.
I would too, but I mean, I think they've got mm-hmm. other question marks, especially now with the news that Keuchel's most likely going to be out until after the All Star break.
And McCullers was on the DL at that time too. So.
I think the McCullers. So do was, I. Was I think gamesmanship. It was kind of a, I think they're trying to limit his outings, but. I mean, you know, how long do they expect Mike Fiers to be able to hold up? Francis Martez does not look ready for the major leagues. You know, I mean, they've got a lot of – I mean, in as much as I love what Brad Peacock has been doing, and I was a huge Brad Peacock fan, you know, a couple years ago, I thought he would break out at some point. I mean, how long can you expect him to hold up these numbers to hold up through an entire season? So you got to think they're buyers, and what else is out there on the market? I mean, Johnny Cueto will probably be available. Sonny Gray will probably be available, but I mean, Cueto's pitched inconsistently. Gray's pitched inconsistently. I think
Jose Tana's been consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, I think these kind of inconsistent, you know, second, third tier starters may get a ransom at the deadline.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Let's talk about another Oakland A, and I think one that I think we may have a little bit brighter future about is Franklin Barreto, who finally got the call up to the major leagues now that Chad Pinder has gone on the DL. Matt, I'll start with you since you're our prospect guy. What are your thoughts on Barreto for this season and moving forward?
I love Barreto's. Well, before the season, I liked his skill set a little bit more, but I still like him going forward. He's a high contact guy. Unfortunately, he doesn't walk too much, but he makes up for it with the high contact, and that seems to have translated early on to the pros so far. But the thing I'm concerned about is he stopped running. Even in the minor leagues, he only attempted 9 stolen bags this year. For context, last year he stole 30 bags, but he was caught 17 times. So you can see why maybe he stopped running. He's 4 for 5, this 4 out of 9 this year in AAA in Nashville on the bases. But the batting average and the slugging percentage are nearly identical to what he posted last year between AA and AAA. He's still only 21 years old, so he is one of the youngest players in AAA. He probably was the youngest everyday player. He was the second youngest player last year in the Texas League, where he played most of the season, and he was amongst the league leaders in batting average and the aforementioned stolen bases. The ultimate defensive home is the question for me. But it's also the organization that plays Marcus Semien at shortstop, so I don't think they value infield defense as much as most other teams do. And they're playing Chad Pinder there now, and Pinder, from all accounts, is
not good defensively, no.
Yeah, range challenged and arm challenged and probably a good second baseman, but they don't need another one of those. That's all they have. The best tool for Barreto is the arm, so I think that's why you're going to put him there. But on offense, I mean, it's the hit tool, and he's always hit despite being one of the youngest players in every single level. He's going to be looked at and viewed unfairly as the return for the Josh Donaldson, which goes against him in all forms because he's going to be underwhelming because he's not Josh Donaldson, and who is? So I do think he's 15 to 20 homer upside. Originally, I thought he might steal 20 bases in the majors, but I don't think he will. I think now he's sort of 10 to 12 guy, even if that, because he stopped running this year for whatever reason. Yeah, he's been inefficient, but what reason do the A's have right now to have him stop running? The A's should have him, encourage him to do it, because what are they going to do? You know, they're not winning games, and they don't really want to win games if they're being honest with you. So, I hope he starts running a little bit more to see what he has, but a little discouraged by that. But I do think, again, he's a 280, 15 to 20 homer guy, which is still valuable, but not nearly without the 20 stolen base upside.
Evan, what are your thoughts on Barreto?
More or less the same. When you take a look at what the organization is doing, you know, how long they actually think he's going to make an impact for, I think when the call was made to bring him up, you know, people wondered, is this just a short-term thing? Is this an organization that will truly have him up for the long term? Where is he going to play? That's certainly factored in. But, you know, given the fact that he can play second or short for the team, it's going to make sense for them just to stick with him. There's really been no indications that he will be sent down immediately. I mean, the return certainly is nice with the home run that he hit quite soon, you know, from getting the recall. You like to see the prospects, when they are recalled, perform well right away. And in a season where offensive prospects have been very frustrating to even take these flyers on, whether it's Moncada, Rosario, Torres, like all these guys that just either haven't been called up or have been hurt or whatever, Barreto's probably going to be the best one up, you know, short of obviously Bellinger. We all know that's going right now.
And Torres isn't coming up with the elbow. So.
Yeah, nope. Yep. So, but like you said, I mean, you alluded to kind of his hit tools right now, a higher average player. I mean, he's not going to be, you know, certainly the next batting champion, but, you know, around 280 plus, modest power. I mean, he's not a 40 home run guy, but, you know, he could probably hit 15 or 20 or so. The speed's there, and I certainly think that if they give him opportunities, and like you said, I mean, quite frankly, the club has nothing to lose, really. He can accrue a good amount of stolen bases. So everything that fantasy owners want in a player, he has. It's a matter of how long is he going to stay up with the club, and can they have any kind of offense around him? Because, you know, Chris Davis is great, but, you know, as a whole, this team is pretty bereft of talent. So it makes sense for them just to kind of stick with him for the long haul now.
Yeah, I don't think they would have brought him up if they didn't anticipate keeping him up to kind of stay. I think they're going to attempt to move Jed Lowry, especially considering how amazing Jed Lowry's season's been so far. I mean, another one of those guys that
That's a shock to me, too.
Yeah, that's going to... been a little bit of a shocker has been how good Lowry's
fantasy
been.
Zombie. Yeah.
But I mean, I wouldn't expect too much from him. I don't know. I mean, I think he in the future is kind of a 2010 guy, 280 average, but I don't know if the power is completely developed yet. And so, especially playing in Oakland, I think he could be a little bit. I don't think you're going to see like a 20-homer pace rest of the season necessarily. But I think if you're hurting a shortstop, which a number of people can be in the middle infield at this point in the season, he's worth a pickup because he does have some upside and some prospect pedigree. So Breno's a guy that I put in some claims on and got him in a couple of leagues already. So
I picked him up in the staff dynasty or staff redraft league about 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm surprised he was available. But I mean,
I
get
him,
it.
I think I had him and dropped him.
You might have. That might have been what it was. I think you guys both nailed it too. I mean, the upside is something that doesn't exist anywhere else on the waiver wire in your league. So I think you kind of have to take a shot based on that.
All right, let's move on. Talk about Julio Chacin, who's put together a pretty good stretch so far. So Evan, are you buying it at all?
Not really, and I hate to just kind of pass it off and just be like, meh, in terms of Chacin, but that's kind of the player he is for me. And though we've talked about the offensive surge that's happened over the last year or two, and certainly you have pitchers like this that'll put together a string of starts that makes you raise an eyebrow, but that's all it is for me. If you're in a quality start league and not a league that, you know, has wins, he's been great for you. Certainly, but I just take a look at the track record, and it's hard for me to think that the switch has randomly flipped at the first half of the year. I mean, he's a guy that is, again, inconsistent, akin to a Sonny Gray like we reflected earlier. ERA going back, I mean, 6, 7, 8 years. It's 3.6, then it's 4.3, then it's 3.4, then it's 5.4, and 3.3, and 4.8, and lo and behold, you know, odds and evens, now he's having a good year again. So to trust him for an extended period of time to say that he's a top 40 pitcher the rest of the year, I think is even a stretch for me. But the ballpark's going to help him, certainly. And, you know, he's in the midst of a good run, and you ride the hot hand. This is a pitcher I'll add and stream for a bit, but I'm not going to rely on him long term.
Matt, are you relying on Chacin at all?
No, not long term. I will. I mean, if I need a streamer in like a few leagues, like Evan said, I won't be afraid to grab him. At home this year, this sums him up perfectly. At home, his ERA in 47 innings is 1.72. On the road in 36 innings, it's 9.08. Mm-hmm. That's everything you need to know. He's a streamer guy. You got to ride him when he's hot. He added bonus, though, in quality start leagues. He's a valuable guy because he's not on any sort of inning restriction. So he should be able to theoretically go deeper in games, and right now he's doing that. But he does have a 1.3 whip despite the solid run. So, I mean, that also can hurt you if you rely on it, which I don't think anybody is. NL-only leagues, he's obviously probably kind of a little bit disappointing, to be honest, because you drafted him with – I know San Diego's not the pitcher's haven it has been, but, I mean, you still probably would expect a little better numbers out of him than what you're getting. But, I mean, it is Julio Chacin, and I was actually kind of shocked to know he's only 29. I actually kind of thought he was older for some reason. But – hey, it is what it is. Ride him out now in quality start leagues, but he should always be on your roster bubble going forward.
Yeah, over the course of the last, or well, let's just say through his four starts in June, 3.12 ERA, 1.08 WHIP.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean he's been great in the month of June, and it's a nice little stretch, but more than likely you've missed out on his best work of the season. So, I mean, if he's got like an interesting, an interesting home start, he's got, you know, if he gets like the Giants at home or, you know, the Marlins at home or something like that, maybe you try to exploit. But I just, you know, the hard part with streaming pitchers and riding hot streaks with pitchers is they can be disastrous to your ratios. They can really set you back when you miss on a couple of them. And so I tend to ride the hot streaks more with hitters than I will with pitchers. And Chacin is a guy that I think is best used for, you know, good matchups at home. Other than that, I'll leave him on the waiver wire in pretty much any depth of league outside of NL only.
I want to touch on one quick thing. It's not really Chacin related. It's just how I approach fantasy baseball related. I used to, up until like a month ago, I was the kind of guy I would pick up and just, I had a roster spot in my Money Yahoo League, which I play with a bunch of my buddies from school still. We're going on about 6-7 years now. It's a redraft league and everything like that. But what I used to do was I would just have one spot on my roster with the starting pitcher. I would just pick up a new one every day and stream them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing that anymore. Because, like
it's
you said,
really hard
it destroys the ratios now with the landscape of pitching the way it is now. Now what I'm doing is, if I do see a matchup I like, I will stream him. But if I don't, for the next couple of days or two, I'll drop him. But then I'll pick up a reliever.
I'll put the relievers in
my lineup and ride them out until I find a really good guy starting at home. There's like four or five offenses I want to pick on, and I only start the guy at home. And if there's somebody available that's starting against them at home, odds are I'm going to play him, and then I'm going to drop him before his start's even over, and pick up a reliever on a team that wins a lot of games. That's going to get me a lot of strikeouts in that one inning of work. Like, that's what I'm doing now, and streaming is killing me. So I'm done with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really really good point. If you look and kind of see, I mean, I've talked about it a lot. I'm absolutely dominating the Barf League this year. And for those of you who are newer to the podcast, the Barf League is the Bay Area Roto Fantasy League. It's an industry league based out of San Francisco that I started a couple years ago with guys like Howard Bender, Laura Michaels, Ray Flowers, Sammy Reed, Doug Thurborn. So some really good players, and I'm absolutely crushing them. And part of it is doing exactly what you talked about, is I have not really – I did actually, I think, my first streaming move of the season this last week. Other than that, I've loaded my pitching staff with high-quality relievers. And they, you know, they help supplement my ERA and WHIP. I've got a couple stud starters. I haven't been bitten by injury too badly. But that's pretty much what I've done, and I've pretty much all season long been in, you know, first place in every single pitching category because of it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a thing that's worth knowing. I mean, that's one of the things that I've changed the most about my personal fantasy game is that I am no longer, and to be honest with you, an added benefit of that is it takes less time as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not sitting there looking every day trying to find a starting pitcher, because it's fool's gold chasing the, because the blow-ups are happening. I know this isn't the right number, but I feel like blow-ups are happening twice as often as they usually are. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if they really are, but that's just how I feel about it. And it's been rough this year out there, so I'm done with that game.
Well, and I mean, something you mentioned earlier in the podcast about Sidney Gray having, you know, 4.4 ERA and that being around league average.
Yeah.
That tells you all you need to know, is that a 4 ERA isn't what it used to be. You know, a few years ago, a 4 ERA was like, oh my God, you're in the bottom of your ERA category, and now you're probably mid-pack.
I think the last time I willingly owned a guy with a 4.5 ERA is when McGuire and Soso were hitting everything into the stands.
Yep.
let's move on and talk about Malik Smith, who is getting some run out in center field in Tampa Bay and putting it to good use. So far this season at the major league level, his triple slash is .350, .435, .438. He's got one home run and 9 stolen bases for the Rays. Evan, what are your thoughts on Malik Smith?
Smith is pretty much producing in the categories that the owners hope for him to produce in. And you know, for what it's worth, this is pretty much a situation that you are enjoying. This is not a situation where a guy gets called up and he's a power hitter and you're looking to get that instant, you know, 5-10, you know, Bellinger-like homers in a week here. and then they just fall flat on their face, this is a person that you, again, you're getting what you paid for. Speed's at a premium. We know it. It's been said a million times and a billion articles here. It's hard to find guys that steal 25-plus bags anymore, and quite frankly, Smith could do that with his eyes closed. He's a speedster. He'll chip in a home run or two here or there, but he's going to get on base quite a bit. He's going to get the green light as often as he possibly can, and the Rays, again, akin to going back to a Barreto, where it's just a team with nothing to lose. That's kind of what the Rays are at this point. They know they're not going to contend. They know that they're in an extremely difficult division there. So I think that, keeping him up for the long haul is what they intend on doing. And, for owners that picked him up for a couple bucks in FAB or that added him just as a flyer, you can get a guy that, again, will finish the year with 30-plus stolen bases, assuming he gets this run on here. And given the injuries that the Rays have, it looks like certainly has a bit of a leash.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Malik Smith?
Yeah, I'm going to touch on a lot of what Evan said. He's kind of has that fourth outfielder profile, but he's taking advantage of the Kevin Kiermaier injury and playing every day, and at least against right-handers anyways, and hitting the ball, walking, and stealing bases. And he's doing exactly as advertised, better than advertised, to be honest with you right now, with the batting average. I wasn't really expecting much out of the average, definitely not 350. I was thinking about 260, 270 was going to be the peak here, because he has absolutely zero power, and he's a slap hitter essentially, and he can't hit lefties. So you got to ride what you can out of him. He's always going to be a high BABIP guy because he can fly. He's probably one of the fastest guys in the majors. Really good defensive guy. He's going to be out there. The defense, if he was forced into a regular role like he is now with the Kiermaier injury, and he wasn't hitting, he would still be playing because the defense is going to keep him on the field, and he's going to get the stolen bases regardless of that. Obviously, it helps hitting 350 because he's got nine stolen bases now. But I mean, you have to ride him out now. He's been fantasy gold in a sense of things, because he's doing exactly what you paid for. I paid for him big in our staff dynasty league. I think I dropped like $250 on him, because we have $1,000 fab, and I think I dropped $250 on him because I needed the steals, and he's been great because he's been giving them to me. So it's been nice. I just need to find the saves in that league. Justin traded some closers. But anyways.
I almost did, and then I realized I need the saves just as bad as you do.
Yeah, well, I couldn't give up Trevor Story because I think he's going to have a monster second half, so mm-hmm. I couldn't do that. But anyways, back to Malik Smith. I mean, he's been exactly as advertised but better with the batting average. The batting average has been not a detriment. It's actually been an asset. I don't expect that to continue, but I do expect the steals to continue, and that's why you have him. So ride it out.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a 435 BABIP. So that's coming back down to earth. And, I mean, I would probably give him a little bit larger BABIP than I think the projection systems would give him, because both Zips and Seamer kind of project him at a 322 BABIP rest of the way. I'd be more in line with his career average, which is 343, which would probably drop his average to the 265, 270 range. But with that, I mean, with the playing time he's going to be getting in Tampa Bay, he could put together another 15 to 20 stolen bases rest of the season. And with you can live with a 265 average if he's giving you 15 to 20 more stolen bases this year.
Mm-hmm. I just wish Billy Hamilton would adopt the hitting. He's been better at it lately with hitting the ball on the ground more, but I wish he would do it more like Malik Smith does, because it definitely benefits his game. I mean, he's a slap hitter through and through. Hamilton's supposed to ball in the air a little bit too much for his skill set. I think Malik Smith, if put toe-to-toe, is a better offensive player than Hamilton. And I hope, not to go on a rant, but I think Billy Hamilton needs to patent his offensive game after Malik's more than he does.
I think it's a fair criticism. Let's talk about Jacob Freya. He has come up and been absolutely lights out for the Rays. So far this year, in four starts, he is 3-0, a 2.10 ERA, over 10 Ks per nine. Evan, what are your thoughts on Jacob Freya?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the Rays are benefiting from this youth infusion, and Freya's leading the pack here. Look, before he got recalled, people wondered, what kind of a prospect is he? Is this a control pitcher? Is it a power pitcher? He's a power pitcher, folks. 84 strikeouts in less than 60 innings prior to getting recalled this year, and we've seen that continue. 7 strikeouts, 9 strikeouts, 8 strikeouts, and if he can keep doing this, every game, which, you know, isn't outside of the realm of reason, I wouldn't say, if to get 6 or 7 plus for him. It's going to be, again, just a return on value. We didn't really know when he'd be recalled because the way that the Rays were playing and what they were guesstimating. But, you know, he'd been fantastic, like you said, certainly since he came up. Whether luck's a factor or not a factor, or the teams, you know, he's been thrown against and when he's been throwing against them have maybe looked a little bit better, that's hard to say. I expect certainly a 2.10 ERA to continue and a sub-1 whip, but, you know, that 3-ish ERA and a 1.15 whip or so, I would say is definitely doable for him. So a fantastic pickup, especially if you're in a deeper format.
Matt, you're a prospect guy. What are your thoughts on Freya?
I like Freya a lot, what he's doing this year. He's killing my Brett Honeywell buzz, but that's okay because he's producing. The thing with Freya, really, really good 2015. Double A with the Rays, 75 innings pitched, 11.47 Ks per nine. Yeah, he walked over 3.5 guys, but that 11.47 Ks, 2.51 ERA, obviously in Double A, but that'll play. 2016, he repeated Double A, did not have it nearly as successful anywhere. Went up to Triple A, strikeouts dipped to 8.5. The walks went up to 4.2. So that's where the red flags come in. As far as his major league cameo, 25 innings, I think the strikeout rate is 100% for real. I wouldn't be surprised if when everything regulates, he sits around this. He's at 10.1 now. I wouldn't be surprised if he was at 9.5 to 10, just because he's a power pitcher, like Evan said. Plus changeup. I love changeup guys. I feel like a changeup is a pitch you can't teach. You can teach someone a breaking ball. A changeup's a field pitch. He has that. Freya needs a breaking ball, unfortunately, so maybe he can learn. You know, the Rays have Jose De Leon in the same situation, kind of needs a breaking ball, but they must value the changeup. Alex Cobb, guys like James Shields, who's a big Ray, they love the changeup guys, and that's what Freya is. He's a changeup artist that happens to throw in the mid-90s, which is outstanding. He sits 92, gets it up a lot higher than that. I've seen him in a minor league game on the minor league gun hit 97. Obviously, I'm questioning the gun on that, but I mean, it was legit. The hitters looked fooled, and he definitely needed another challenge. The one thing I am skeptical though is the walks are not going to stay 1.75. And you're probably thinking, well, duh. Well, I mean, look at the minor league numbers. His career walk rate in the minor leagues is right around 3.5. So the walks are going to go up significantly. But even if they do, the way he's striking out guys and the way he's suppressing hits, he's still going to carry value because he's given up less than hit per inning. So even if the walks do take a jump, as long as the hit rate stays where it is, he's still going to provide value. So I'm sure he's owned in every format now because, you know, he's put four good quality starts together. So, you know, if you have him, great. If you don't, I wouldn't be trying to buy him, though, because I do think, again, the Rays slow play their prospects. He's going to get shut down with an innings limit probably end of August, early September. That's just how they do it. Tampa is one of the most frustrating organizations with the prospects, but they do it right because a lot of guys come up and do have success. But ride it out and don't go trading for him, unfortunately. But I don't even know if I look to sell, though, either, because he has been that great.
Yeah, I don't think you necessarily need to sell because I agree with you. The strikeout rate is legit, and in this day and age, and what we're dealing with, especially with injuries this year and pitching performance in general, I don't think you're going to get the commiserate value you need to in return for Freya. And I think there is some sharp regression coming. Like you mentioned, the walk rate is way too low. It's going to climb by, you know, a run and a half, 2 run per 9 before things are all said and done for this year. But he's always been a guy who's suppressed homers in the minor leagues. I think the strand rate, I think he's gotten a little bit lucky there as well. So he's not putting guys on via the walk, and he's getting a little lucky once he does. In terms of the guys that come home. So I think at the end of the day, you're looking at a guy who's probably going to have like a 3.75 ERA rest of the way. But it's going to come with a pretty nice strikeout rate and a Rays team that doesn't appear to be selling. You know, I think one of the things we were worried about coming into the year was whether or not the Rays were going to make a run at it. And whether they are going to sell a lot of their guys at some point, especially a guy like Alex Colome, their closer, or maybe some of their starters. And it appears with the news that they are the kind of guy going or the team going after Adedi Echevarria that maybe they are looking to buy at this point
They did get Hecheveria, by the way.
Oh, they did.
Did they? Yep, they got it finalized.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you know, maybe that is one of those things that shows, hey, the Rays believe that they are contenders this year, and they could win some games down the stretch. So I like Freya. There's definitely going to be some regression, but I think you just ride it out as long as it goes. All right, let's move on and talk about Andrew McCutchen. McCutchen, you know, wasn't that long ago when people were taking McCutchen in the top three in fantasy drafts. He's been kind of on a downward slope since, but so far in the last month or so, he has been absolutely red hot and is putting together a kind of a bounce back season. 14 home runs, 6 stolen bases, .268, .350, .482 triple slash. Evan, what are your thoughts on McCutchen?
Yeah, you know, certainly you summed it up nicely. I think that people were taking a look at McCutchen. You know, hey, now he's over 30. Is that the age of the decline here? Doesn't run certainly as much as he used to. Is he a trade candidate? We know that certainly Austin Meadows was lurking. He had an injury lately here, but has played much better than you expected. I think the biggest thing that, again, really raised my eyebrow is the power returning here. You know, 14 home runs, and we're not even at the break yet. The on-base percentage, we all know, for him is always been high. He's a great contact hitter. You know, the .268 average, I think, is kind of what you're going to get from him at this point. You're not going to return to that 300 plus days, but for what he is, I certainly have to be, again, happy with it. In drafts, he fell and fell and fell, and people were kind of, again, lowballing what I think he was capable of. So it's good to see him return to fantasy relevance and prominence, definitely outperforming what many of us expected, including myself, in terms of projections. What the team's going to do with him, I don't know. I mean, certainly, again, that we know that this team has had a handful of pitfalls, you know, with the Marte suspension and the struggles of the staff and whatnot. So whether or not he ends up on a different club, coin flip for me at this moment, it's hard to say. Certainly, there are going to be teams that want him on their team, but it just depends upon what the Pirates can get in return. So it's been a pleasant surprise.
Matt, you bought him in the staff, staff league. And we're really, really excited with with the price that you had to pay. What are your thoughts on McCutchen? You happy about your buy so far?
Well, to clarify, the staff league is an OBP format, so he does carry a little bit more value there because the walk rate, while not what it used to be, is still strong. I mean, you're talking about a guy who put, from 2012 or 2015, put four seasons in a row of over 400 OBP. And last year he hit .256, but the OBP was still 80 points better, .336. I mean, that's still pretty good separation between the walk rate or between the batting average and OBP. I was a little nervous, though, coming to borrow a little nugget from RotoWire here. Through his first 45 games, McCutchen was hitting .200, .271, .359 mm-hmm. with 6 home runs. After the 24 games since then, this was written on the 20th of June, so it's about a week old. 24 games since then, he's hit .402 with 8 homers and 23 RBI. So it's definitely been a nice late charge here. I do think it might be time to try to sell him in a redraft format, because, or even in Dynasty, I think you missed the boat already. But I think in a redraft, I think you can probably resell him, especially in OBP formats, if you're not a contending team, which I still consider myself a contending team in our staff league. So I'm not going to be openly moving McCutchen. But I think he's an extremely valuable piece for someone that is. Yeah, the stolen bases have bounced back a little bit. He's 6-for-7 as opposed to 6-for-13 last year, and he's equal to the stolen base total last year. This year already, in 74 games as opposed to the 153 he played last year. So I think it's fair to say he probably gets a handful more. He's still walking at a strong rate. Yes, he's hitting less hard contact. He's striking out more, walking less. It's a downward trend kind of, but he's still a valuable player. I don't think Pittsburgh moves him. I think they floated his name out there, got so much negative backlash for trading the guy that was the face of their franchise, and I don't think they would do it because I still think they're a team that values their attendance, their gate too much, relies on it, and I think if they trade McCutchen with where they are in the standings, I think they might lose a lot of people, and I don't think they'll do that. So I think McCutchen staying put, which might be a good thing because he's hitting the ball right now. He's comfortable there. He doesn't want to get moved. But I am buying McCutchen if he's made available, that's for sure.
I think I'm buying him this year. I think right now you have to pay obviously a higher price than you did last month, but I'm more than happy. I mean, part of it is because I do think he does get moved. So I disagree with you there, Matt. You know, you talk about their attendance. They're already 24th in attendance in the major leagues.
I know. You know, and I mean, think about what happens if they trade him.
Well, it happens, but they've got to be a team that always is looking forward. They've got Austin Meadows in the minor leagues who
not having a good year.
He's not having a good year, but still,
and he's hurt.
He doesn't belong there. I mean, he should have been up by now. This is a lost season for them with a Marte suspension. And right now he is healthy, and that is something he hasn't been the last couple years, and that's really damaged his overall value. And they need to, kind of take a, we talked about Sonny Gray and the A's missing kind of the boat and their opportunity to trade Sonny Gray before he got injured, and now they've lost a lot of, potential value. They need to trade McCutchen while he's still healthy. And I think they will, and I think there will be a deal struck, whether he ends up in Washington or, another franchise that needs a center fielder. They're going to move him and get the pieces to rebuild, because they are one losing streak or one Cubs hot streak away from being completely out of it in the Central. So, I would buy him. I think wherever he goes, he adds on park factors, adds a better mm-hmm. lineup around him. And I believe that, one of the reasons we've seen the decline has been health, and right now he's healthy, so you got to buy that. Let's talk about Jose Quintana before we wrap up the show. He's had a really, really rough season so far, really, really struggled, 4.69 ERA. Over the course of the last couple starts, he seemingly is starting to put it all back together. And this is another guy that could get moved to the deadline. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Jose Quintana?
He's simply a better pitcher than he's shown. I do think the rate stats are, while they're down a little bit, I mean, the walk rate's at a higher level than it's ever been, but the strikeouts are too. Perhaps that's a trade-off that he shouldn't be making. I don't know if he's doing it on purpose or not, but it just happens to fall that way. Home runs a little high for him, very high for him. You talk about a guy whose last 3 years prior was 0.45 per nine, 0.7, and 0.95 homers per nine. Now he's up over 1.2, which is an amazing number for someone like this. It's never a good park he's pitched in, but he's always done well. He used to be the most consistent guy out there, and unfortunately, this year it's not. Left on base percentage is at 70%, which is low. Not getting any help from the bullpen. He's still fly ball oriented in a bad park. He's getting a little bit unlucky with the fly ball. Fly ball home run per fly ball percentage is 3% higher than typical for Quintana. And I mentioned him, as a guy that might be on the market. I don't think the White Sox move him either, because I think the White Sox are closer to contention than people believe. I do think, because I think the White Sox are on like a two or three-year plan, and Jose Quintana is under contract very, very cheaply through 2018, through next year, but then he has two cheap options on top of that. So he's extremely valuable piece, and I do think the White Sox, with Moncada probably a full season in 18, I think they're gonna be players in the free agent market as well, with Jerry Reinsdorf and all them guys. They'll spend money if they need to, so... I think the White Sox will be, a lot better next year than they are now. And I think Quintana's part of their plans in the near future, because I do think they have plans on contending. That's why I don't think they're going to move Jose Abreu, because I think they want Abreu on the roster to mentor guys like Moncada and Luis Robert, who should be up in 2 years, and guys like that they can, because Robert, not to go on a Jose Abreu rant, but I don't think the White Sox are going to sell anybody but Todd Frazier or Robertson, because I think Abreu was a big part of that pitch to get Robert. And a lot of they showed him like a slideshow or like a White Sox highlight reel of all the Cuban influence they've had. And I definitely think Abreu and Moncada are going to be part of their plans for a long time. And I think Quintana is going to be their de facto number two for a long time, because that's the type of guy he's been. I think this is a blip in the radar. I do think he bounces back, and I think it's a keeper dynasty buy low right now.
All right, Evan, what are your thoughts on Quintana?
Yeah, you know, certainly agree with a lot of points that Matt made there. He's been better than what he's shown, whether you take a look at any of the sabermetric stats. But, I mean, for the FIP and the XFIP have been at least a half run below where the ERA falls currently. And like he said, I mean, it's been a trade-off. The walks and the home runs have been up, which has certainly killed his statistics. And, but the strikeouts have been there. So he certainly is, he posts the highest strikeouts, dating all the way back to his Yankees and Mets farmhand days here. So the New York product that got away. But, again, Quintana kind of reminded me a bit of the Sonny Gray we talked about before, a team that probably could have gotten a lot, prior to the season started in terms of trading them, and that just didn't happen. And now that that's not the case, barring the Sox being absolutely blown away with a good haul of prospects or somebody that they feel, can really be a cornerstone for them over the next several years, I can't see Quintana moving. You'd really have to have a team that, again, offers them a complete deal. In terms of what he is kind of guy, rest of season, SP3 is kind of the territory that I have him here. I certainly think that the wins are going to be a big question mark. Who knows in terms of how much he's going to accrue here with the Sox with the wins, but a good pitcher. I can see him rest of season probably being like that 3.5 to 3, maybe 3.4 or so ERA, and certainly a WHIP way closer to 1 than the 1.3 it is right now.
Yeah, he's been much better on the road this year. Almost two runs, actually over two runs better in terms of ERA on the road and then at home. Also, given up a ton fewer home runs on the road in spite of the fact that he's pitched way more innings on the road. He's given up 9 home runs in 33 innings at home and only 3 home runs in 55 innings on the road. And he's been pitching great as of late over the course of June, 2.25 ERA in 24 innings, holding batters to a 2.16 average so far this month. I think Jose Quintana is back, and I'm on the fence on whether I think they are going to sell him or not. I think they are. I think if they get the right offer, they will. But I don't see necessarily a buyer that's going to be able to match up well enough with what the White Sox got in the Chris Sale trade, in the Adam Eaton trade. I mean, they got hauls.
Mm-hmm.
The only team, the only two teams that match up kind of really, really well for those kind of hauls. For me, at least, are Colorado, who I don't think would sell for Jose Quintana necessarily, because I think he'd be an awful fit for that park, and the Dodgers, who already have a ton of lefties. And I think if the Dodgers go out and get someone, they probably go out and get a righty. I'm less optimistic that he will be moved at the deadline, unless Houston decides to pony up.
Did you say Quintana has allowed more home runs at home? Or
yeah.
Then okay.
Yeah, nine home runs in 33 innings at home, 3 home runs in 55 innings on the road.
Okay, so I thought you were going to talk about he's like pulling like a Jose Abreu. Have you seen his splits?
No, I haven't.
Yeah,
oof. Jose Abreu has 13 home runs this year. Care to guess how many of them are at home?
3 at home.
0.
Yeah, none.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah, and that's like one of the best parks, especially in the American League. You don't have Coors Field and all that stuff. So yeah, it's been weird. So I thought that's why I was like intrigued. I thought you said the other way around, but I back to Quintana for one quick second. This might be like a crazy thought, but don't you? It's easy to say it now because the numbers don't match up. But do you think his consistency was a bit overvalued? I think he was going maybe a little too high.
Oh, I mean, he was definitely going a little bit too high.
People were using him as a building block or like a centerpiece for their staff, and he's not. He's a perfect complimentary piece, but you need another guy.
Yeah, I think what people I don't think anybody saw this coming, though. If I told you Jose Quintana was going to regress this year, you'd be like,
based off what? Based off what? Yeah.
Well, but even if you acknowledge that he was going to regress, you wouldn't have said he was going to be like a 4.69 ERA guy. You'd have been like, okay, well, give me his 2012 numbers.
3.69? Yeah, that's more appropriate, right?
Yeah, like, right. So, I mean, I understand why people saw him and saw, hey, you know, this is a guy with a really high floor, and that is, one, we knew the White Sox were going to be bad. Two, we knew he was going to be in a bad park. So I think there was kind of some, a little bit of foolhardiness, but also I understand why, because he, you know, the previous three seasons he's put up, or previous four seasons, he's put up great ratios in 200, you know, innings each year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand why people did. I didn't, because Quintana's never been a guy that I would own necessarily, because I don't believe he has the upside of a number two starting pitcher.
Agreed with you. Yeah, that's kind of what I want to say. Yeah.
From a real life perspective, though, and having known guys certainly that that have been GMs and whatnot, I mean, in real life, you know, kind of excluding fantasy, consistency is heavily valued for pitchers. So when we heard all the rumors about, you know, especially like the Yankees kind of going back to the New York teams here about, you know, a good farm system, you know, maybe the deal might work out. They know that they needed pitching. You know, whether or not that still happens, I don't know. But anytime that you have a pitcher where you take a look and he's kind of been steady Eddie, he might not be glorious. He might not have this crazy strikeout rates and super sexy numbers. But anytime that a GM sees that, and it's just like, you know, look, I can get him for some, you know, mid-range prospects. But like you said, if the Sox expect to get the kind of deals that they've been able to fleece, for a better word, the other teams on, he's not going to get traded. It's 100% dependent upon what they're continuing to ask for. And I think that what they could potentially ask for has been lowered at this point.
Yeah,
given
they have zero reason to
theoretical struggles. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Yankees are a team that could get involved, but I mean, I just don't.
I don't see it.
I can't see them giving up like a Frazier or anybody really for him, though, because they're so freaking high on their prospects.
Yeah,
right now.
And they're planning for that Bryce Harper, Manny Machado free agent class, and I think what they're going to get, they're going to pay both of those guys $30 million. But the way they're going to get around it is they have so much talent in the minor leagues; it's going to be making nothing. Like Aaron Judge is going to be making $500,000 for another three, 4 years, and they're going to be able to supplement, heavily front load those Harper and Machado deals, potential ones, and then find guys like Clint Frazier and Gleyber Torres that are going to make the league minimum and play around them. You know,
I mean, you know, the one team that I could see attempting to make a play for him,
Dodgers.
Well, the Dodgers, I just don't. I mean, I could see it because they have been linked to him on multiple occasions. You know, they just seem to already have enough lefties in that rotation, you know. And I just don't know if they, you know, I don't know if they want to give up one of their top guys. You know, they've been just a team that hasn't seemed to really wanted to give up the guys in their minor league system, at least the cream of the crop. And I think that's what he would take.
Freeburn's brought those with that way of thinking with him from Tampa Bay.
Yeah. For me, it's Boston. Because it's Dave Dombrowski.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. You know, their rotation has been shaky this year. You know, he wouldn't be a bad fit necessarily in the park. I mean, it's not any worse than what they have out in Chicago.
Just don't know if Boston has the pieces for him. Boston's system is actually kind of bad.
Cubs might be out there too. Don't forget about them. I mean, yeah, for as many guys as they've brought up, and for all the struggles and all the pressure that they've had.
Do you want to know something crazy though? Yeah. I live in Chicago, and Jerry Reinsdorf has gone on record saying he's never going to trade with the Cubs.
Oh, okay. Well, well, that ends that nicely. Now,
yeah.
It?
So the Cubs, Chris Sale, the Cubs could have easily, by far, I think, even topped with what they got for Chris Sale from the Red Sox, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't even willing to entertain it because he wasn't going to help them win because he's.
Yeah.
Foolish, I guess I'll say.
Well, you gotta understand the Chicago rivalry. I mean, like, yeah, don't get me wrong. Is it bad business to say you will not entertain offers from a club? Yes, but I mean, if you help the crosstown rivals win a World Series, you're not going to be employed in that
especially
city for very long.
When you already have a little brother complex.
Yeah, exactly.
Do all right.
All right, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Evan, thank you for joining us.
It was my pleasure, and I will guarantee that I will not be gone from you guys for two more years. How about that?
Definitely. Well, we'll definitely get you back on for football, you know, because we definitely need to kind of tap into that knowledge base with the amount of stuff you're doing there. Give yourself some plugs again, and then tell people where you can reach on social media.
Absolutely. So I won't reinvent the wheel and tell you everything I'm doing, but hit me up on Twitter. I'm at @roto_wizard. Write for Football Diehards. Pick up our draft magazine when you see it. Rah, rah. Pat myself on the back. And certainly, if you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter. And I will be on SiriusXM. Hear me on the radio there with all the I'm sure these guys will be on as well. And, yeah, any questions, just give me a holler.
Definitely will. Matt, what are you working on? Where have you reached?
We have the Prospect Show with me and Mike and Andy. We'll hopefully get another episode out this week. We had the last one with Ralph Lifschitz from over at Razzball. Talked about the draft. It was great. So if you haven't listened to that, it's not too late to do that. Get prepared for your supplement drafts for your fantasy baseball league. And football is in full swing at the at our Friends of Fantasy Benefits website, so please check out all that. Football Pod coming out soon with Justin and the boys. So go check all that out. And, yeah, hit me up on Twitter, MBTompFWFB. Baseball questions, Keeper Dynasty Format, Redraft, fire them at me. I'll be happy to help.
And you can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Email me or the show, FriendsOfFantasyBenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my baseball stuff over on FanGraphs and sometimes on Friends of Fantasy Benefits. All my football stuff will be on Friends of Fantasy Benefits. You can hear me on the radio on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 8 to 10 p.m. on Thursdays with Laura Michaels for the Tout Wars Hour. Also have a couple other things in the works that hopefully I'll be announcing in the near future. And football is starting here at Friends of Fantasy Benefits. You can already get our ranks for this, our staff ranks for the season, up on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. You can sort them by the ranker or by you know, the overall, and we've got each position up there individually, so you can go check those out. And we will have football podcasts coming out in full force starting this week. I think Eli and I are going to get together on Wednesday, and then we'll have multiple episodes a week all through the preseason and in through the regular season all year long. So definitely check all that out. And that is going to do it for us today. For Evan, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. A fantastic baseball season.
Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. All night with the phone off the hook. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars.
Welcome to episode 292 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing? You're on mute. Matt? Hello?
Uh-oh. All right, I'm back.
Let's try that again.
Oh, did you start already? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, I told you I was getting a water.
Oh, I thought you were. I thought you were joking.
Oh no.
Oh my God. Perfect. That is totally going in the back of the episode.
Okay. I think. Well, actually, it's not my bad. I don't know.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right.